Hi there. I'm Paul Boger, host of KNPR State of Nevada. Enjoy this conversation from the show. If you like it, please follow us, and thanks. From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Paul Boger. This is State of Nevada. In April of this year, a lawsuit was quietly filed in federal court. The 200-page complaint names various officials at state agencies and local governments. It claims they knowingly aided and abetted the physical or sexual assault of children while in juvenile detention and correctional facilities in Nevada. The suit brought by John Doe lists 96 accounts of sexual assault of minors by correctional staff over the span of decades and paints a picture in vivid and excruciating detail. It also alleges that the abuse was, quote, not a matter of isolated misconduct, but rather systemic failure. Those allegations come just months after state inspectors published their own report. It questioned whether management at some facilities, or even those who license them, are adequately protecting the children in their care. Here now to talk about that is Tabitha Mueller. She's the Nevada Independent reporter who broke the story. Tabitha, thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks for having me on.
Roughly 100 people are accusing various officials at state and county levels of physical and sexual abuse. Give me the broad strokes. What is this lawsuit alleging?
So I'm going to put a caveat here that this lawsuit, I mean, reading it is horrendous. It's in excruciating detail. It was sickening. And that, I mean, I've heard that word so many times talking about this, but I think that like sort of a broad overview, I'd say that it describes molestation, rape, masturbation, penetration of minors in juvenile correction facilities at the hands of officials who are supposed to be taking care of them, or what the allegations say.
Where was this abuse happening, and what's the time frame of it? Are some of the victims currently in state or local custody?
Most of these victims are largely adults now, right? But when this happened, many of them were 11 or 12. I mean, the abuse sort of took place from the alleged abuse took place from 2001 to about 2024, right? And it sort of claims that facility staff actively work to conceal it within those years, and as part of that, in that time frame, I mean, we're talking about, when we're saying conceal, like bribery, threats of more sexual harassment, more sexual assaults, that kind of thing. So really, just horrifying allegations to read.
Sounds incredibly vile. Just reading the story you published was excruciating. Was this more of a Clark County issue, or is this something that's happened statewide, the rurals? Where?
It definitely focuses on the state. There are officials in the state who are named. It also alleges that it took place in Clark County facilities as well as Douglas County facilities. And what's interesting about a suit like this, I mean, we're talking 96 people. As the suit gets more attention, it's likely that there could be more folks who join on if they had similar experiences. But time will tell on that one.
You know, how have those accused agencies responded? Have you heard back from them at all?
So we reached out to different agencies, and they all said they couldn't comment on pending litigation, right? So this is ongoing through the court system. And it's sort of a matter, again, of time will tell.
You know, before the suit was filed, state inspectors in December, I believe, published a report finding welfare and safety concerns in about a third of the children's facilities that they reviewed. What does that report say?
So what that report is basically saying is that there are things that made inspectors question, you know, the safety of children in these homes, right? And what's sort of interesting about reports like that is it's not saying that the problems are fixed. It's just more pointing out that, hey, there are problems and concerns. And when we're talking about some of those concerns, they listed out the names of different facilities, and they said, look, that report did focus on sort of more egregious instances, right? But there were things like loaded firearms in foster care homes that were not attended, that were not put away, that children could have had access to, right? So real safety concerns, but then also concerns about people not being able to report instances of abuse or issues like that, right? And what I think is the thing that I sort of pulled away from is that was really focused, that report was really focused on the foster care system, whereas what we were talking about with this lawsuit is the juvenile justice system. But both of them are underneath the care and supervision of the state and county officials, right? And that's what folks are sort of talking about is there enough protections for minors in these situations?
Ultimately, what are victims hoping to come out of this lawsuit?
So the lawsuit that was filed, victims are asking for compensation ranging from mental health, helping them address their mental health needs, as well as damages as in a lot of different forms, right? And I think they're also looking for accountability here. I mean, these are victims who had a lot of their youth taken away in a large respect from what they're alleging. And they're asking for, hey, this is not okay. And we want compensation for that and restitution.
That's Tabitha Mueller, a Nevada Independent reporter, talking to me about a recent pair of stories she wrote. They cover allegations of abuse across Nevada's juvenile justice system. Tabitha, thank you for this reporting.
Thanks for having me on.
Roughly 5,000 Nevada children were in county or state custody during fiscal year 2023. What could the lawsuit mean for them and the state? And what's needed to prevent this from happening again? Attar Hasibula is the executive director of the ACLU of Nevada. Attar, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. As you mentioned there from Tabitha, these victims are looking for a certain measure of accountability. Let me ask you, this is a civil suit. Why not get law enforcement involved? Why isn't the DA involved in something like this?
You know, part of the issue overall with these types of issues when they come forward where government is on the other end of a civil claim, oftentimes that's a result of inadequate processes that have occurred along the way. And more often than not, that is government committing or government employees or officials committing an act of wrongdoing, there being internal investigations and or nothing happening and nothing coming from them. Civil lawsuits oftentimes are the only recourse that victims of abuse by the government in any form or fashion have to be able to maintain any level of recourse. Independent investigations over the course of time seem optically beneficial for the government. But at the end of the day, very few people believe that the outcomes of those investigations actually yield adequate outcomes to protect survivors of sexual violence or other people harmed in other types of civil rights abuses that occur.
What exactly is the state's legal obligation to provide care for children in its custody?
Well, there's a variety a variety of legal standards that apply to ensure that juveniles or children who are in detention facilities and anyone within state care is actually treated adequately. Under our existing constitutional precedents federally, there remains a variety of provisions that are incumbent on state facilities to ensure the protection of those within its care. That includes a requirement to adequately train and supervise staff. It also ensures and requires that in certain instances, including with respect to young people in juvenile detention facilities, that there's a zero tolerance policy that ends up associated with acts of sexual violence, as has been promulgated previously at the federal level. The issue that has arisen out of this a specific scenario is we have two decades worth of claims related to sexual assault by employees of the state or of local governments who have in fact engaged in really horrendous conduct. There was no follow-up there that seems to have been conducted, at least within the lawsuit has been specified and within other reports that have existed over time. And as a result, there's been immense harm that's come forward. 96 plaintiffs is quite a lot of plaintiffs, and two decades worth of aggravated conduct, including threats to those who said that they would come forward and report those individuals who were involved for the egregious conduct in which they engaged, really kind of prevented and chilled their ability to do so because there was no safety guaranteed for those individuals if they would have reported, for those young people, if they would have reported those same sexual abusers to their supervisors. And so overall, it seems like it was woeful misconduct on the state's end. And the only recourse that really does exist is for this lawsuit to move forward and policymakers potentially to look at this again and see what safeguards they can put in place to protect these kids.
Unfortunately, Attar, this is not an isolated incident. Los Angeles County is in the midst of figuring out how to pay $4 billion to victims of abuse there. What kind of legal liability does this sort of thing put on the state and taxpayers?
Immense potential liability exists as a result of local and state government misconduct on a frequent basis. And this specific case actually highlights some of the most egregious forms of misconduct. Again, we're talking about 2 decades worth of sexual abuse claims, and the claims are laid out in great detail. They crossed gender lines. There was both female and male victims. It seemed that the bulk of the age ranges for those who were victimized were 13, 14, and 15, 96 different plaintiffs. And there were statements that were within the claims that the plaintiffs put forward that alleged there were witnesses to the incidents in many of these instances that occurred. And when the young people said that they would go forward because of the horrendous abuse they faced, they were threatened with even more sexual violence. That's a pervasive problem that exists. And the nature of the way detention is handled overall in this state, where we continue to incarcerate people at scale, and the vilification that occurs within many of the news cycles surrounding the incarceration process actually leaves a lot of these stories in the dark. The sympathy that's associated with many instances of victimization don't occur when we're talking about detainees. And in this instance, what we're seeing is really egregious abuse that's been pervasively ignored by the state. Nothing's been done. And we're hoping, at least on the ACLU's end, that justice is brought forward through this civil suit and the state actually engages in corrective behavior. It's impossible for them to make up for the misconduct that they've engaged in, but they certainly, at least awareness has been brought to the conversation surrounding the issues that have existed here.
Attar Hazibullah is the executive director of the ACLU of Nevada. Attar, thank you.
Thanks so much.
This is KNPR's State of Nevada.